Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team, the FAST Team. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world.
This is Karen Dunbar, your guest host with Managing Safety. Today, we're talking with Thomas Knopf, who's a glider pilot and glideport owner. Welcome, Thomas. We're glad to have you with us today.
Well, we're glad to be here.
Listen, I want to talk with you some today about safety and gliding and what kinds of things glider pilots are doing today in the sport. So first of all, I want to ask a little bit about your background. Tell us how you got into gliding and what you're doing now.
Gee, I got into gliding back in the 60s, like 1960s. And it was an inexpensive way to fly. We had a glider club that organized in our local town in Pennsylvania. And I remember it cost us $8 a month to belong to the club, and each flight cost us 50 cents. And so it was cheap, volunteer help, and that's how we got started. And it grew from that into becoming a flight instructor, and because flight instructors didn't have to pay for their flights. And it grew even more so in that we visited some glider ports around the country, discovered we had really extraordinarily good soaring conditions in Pennsylvania. And so my wife and I decided to start our own glider port there in central Pennsylvania. And that was in 1973.
So you've been in the field for quite a while,
and you've been
providing a great place for glider pilots to practice the sport. You're still in Pennsylvania?
Still in Pennsylvania. The glider port is world famous, and we've had an enormous number of world record flights, and people read the magazines and hear the reports, and so they come from all over the world to fly at our place. So it's a very, very busy, active glider port for the extraordinary soaring conditions. And then we've developed a reputation for excellent flight training safety.
How many people would you say you train in a year?
I don't really know. We have a staff of flight instructors, and I could only make a wild guess. And it's probably like 100 or so that we go through. We're only open in the summer months. Of course, we come to Florida in the wintertime. And it's about that at this time. There was a time we were actually busier, but as we've gotten older, we've slowed our activity down somewhat.
For pilots who've never had the experience of soaring, what can they expect in training if they decided they wanted to add soaring as one part of their aviation experience?
Well, a graded power pilot will find it quite easy. Like, we have a syllabus that is only 8 flights to solo. And so we go through a flight training syllabus that's, the FAA tells us what we are required to teach leading up to solo, and so we can do all of the required maneuvers up through in 8 flights. Then after they get their 8 flights of dual training, then they'll have to have 10 flights of solos, and then an additional maybe 3 or 4 more flights with an instructor to cover all the flight test maneuvers before they're qualified to take the flight test.
What are the biggest safety issues that you find that pilots will encounter when they're training for a soaring ticket?
Well, it's not unlike power flying in that the major safety issue, just like in power, are the landings. That's where the largest number of accidents might occur. And of course, we have an additional issue in flying gliders in the type of training we do, the type of flying we do. We use an airplane to tow us up. And so flying connected to another aircraft with a piece of rope adds its own safety issues, although it turns out to be not so dangerous as it works out.
All right. Well, I understand you've written a number of books that touch on soaring. Could you tell us a little bit about your work as an author?
Sure. Well, when we first started the glider port, there really was very little available especially in the United States. As a matter of fact, we used a book written in England by an author by the name of Derek Piggott. And when I was taught to fly power planes especially, and even in gliders, we used a textbook written by Wolfgang Langewisch called Stick and Rudder. He wrote that in 1944. And I contacted him when we started the glider port because I didn't know how to buy his books to resell to my students. And so he actually sent me some copies for free and told me how to order them, and then ended up coming up to the glider port. We got to know each other very well. And so every day I was teaching the students, and I ended up making out these handout pieces of papers of each item. And then we finally put all of those pieces of paper together to organize the first book called Glider Basics from First Flight to Solo. And then the number, I've written about a dozen books now, and they cover all aspects of flying gliders. And so it just evolved out of necessity because there really wasn't anything that really covered all of the items that need to be covered in one text. So we did it ourselves. And they become very popular.
All right. For listeners at home who might be interested in finding some of your books,
yeah,
where are they going to be most lucky if they look?
Well, they can go to almost any commercial glider port in the country, and they typically will have my books. They can go to our website, of course, and order them off of the web. It's www.eglider, E as in echo, eglider.org, O-R-G, and you'll find all the books that we have to offer.
All right, so if someone's interested in getting into soaring and they read the books that you've written, is that going to give them a good preparation before they come in to start taking their lessons?
That's absolutely the best way. If we could ever get people to read before they show up, it would make our lives a lot simpler, because really the first things we have them do is sit down and read the text, because there's no point in us sitting there reading it to them. Mm-hmm. That's expensive and it's a waste of everybody's time. So we have them read the necessary materials. After they read those chapters that are pertinent for the particular lesson, we give them a written test on that subject matter, which is our quality control to make sure they really know the information before they go fly.
What kind of experience do you have in training people who have no background at all in aviation who come to soaring?
The age limit to solo a glider is only 14 years old. And so we get young boys and girls that come and learn to fly. It's really a wonderful experience for everybody involved. We really enjoy that. And it's, you know, it's technically different than from a grade school, high school. It's more demanding because, you know, there's nothing less than 100%. It has to be 100% correct in everything they know and do. And so it's quite demanding. So they learn a new discipline about reading and learning the information. But having said that, they learn that real quick. Right? On lesson number one, they all of a sudden realize that the exact wording of what they say is extremely important, and we're very demanding. And so they find out that it's a different way of learning than it is in school. And the demands are so high. And if they meet those demands, however, then the process of actually learning to fly go much quicker. So it's an interesting, the first two or three lessons are typically very interesting because initially, typically, they don't take it terribly seriously until they realize that we really are serious about this. Because what they know or don't know can hurt them. And so we're pretty demanding.
With the high school kids,
mm-hmm.
What are you finding is the greatest sort of lack that they have coming into you in terms of subjects? What do they need the most emphasis on?
You know, what we're seeing today, honestly, and we've been discussing this with some of the other teaching professionals, is the kids are now so involved with their handheld devices for information, and they are, like we have this even with our own grandchildren, we notice that they really only concentrate on the absolute minimum amount of knowledge they need to know in order to get through the lesson that they're being taught. Mm-hmm. And they haven't learned to really study so they know the breadth of the subject matter. They seem to only pick out the highlights that might be on the written test and not really know the minutiae of the material. And we're seeing that is a problem, and I would think that that's also a problem at the high school level too.
So you need to help them learn to ask the next question and to go into the material in depth.
Yes, and they learn that real quick, because when they say, I want to learn to fly gliders, we say, here, buy this book, go read chapter one. They go and read chapter one. They come back the next day or that afternoon. Did you read the book? I read the book. Do you have any questions? I don't have any questions. We have a few for you. And we give them written test number one. And we are so demanding on that first test in that they have to answer word for word exactly the way it is in the text. Because if they don't understand why an aircraft has an elevator, why it has an aileron, which are the questions that would be typically on the test, and if they can't recant that exact description, then we're not getting across to them. But if they, on that lesson number one, they realize, holy smokes, this guy's serious. He wants me to know this stuff. And then if we can get past that first lesson, then we got them captured and we get through the rest of the flight training program real easily. Okay. So we're demanding.
All right, we're going to take just a break here for a couple of minutes. We want to thank our listeners and hope you come back to us. Dunbar, back with you for Managing Safety. We're here talking with Thomas Knopf today about soaring and the experience his experiences he has as a soaring pilot and as the owner of a glideport. So, Thomas, we were talking about the media a little while ago. I know you've had some experiences with the media and promoting soaring through the media in the U.S. Tell us about some of those experiences you've had.
Well, probably the one that's most well known would be flying in the movie The Thomas Crown Affair, where my wife and I were stunt doubles for Pierce Brosnan and Rene Russo, and it was extremely interesting for us, of course, to be able to do a full feature movie where they had the glider sequence, and when the producers came to our glider port, the initial time they came and we took them into the hangar where they saw the glider for the first time, apparently it was their first experience by seeing a modern sailplane, they were really impressed with the glider. It's so beautiful. And then when we got involved with the flying, we went from having what they were intended to have, just a 30-second bit of the film, to over 2.5 minutes of movie time, which, you know, in a 90-minute movie is quite a lot of time. They just loved it. It was really wonderful. It was wonderful for us, too, flying with them.
Well, it's one of my favorite movies, and actually that's a very exhilarating sequence. So I'm thrilled to meet you. That was such a great contribution to the movie, and it gave a real feel to it. What do you find that people see as different about soaring as opposed to flying in a powered plane? I mean, what is the thing that they come away with?
Well, it depends on who you mean by the people. Like, we could do glider rides where people are doing it, and I think they look at it as being kind of pushing the limits a bit because you're flying without an engine. And so I think they look at that as being kind of daring. But we get people who do fly, power pilots that are transitioning to gliders that come into flying gliders. And I think initially they may not understand the depth and scope of what we are capable of doing, but just being around our glider port, like it is one of the places in the world where people do long flights and fast flights. And so we've set numerous world records at our soaring site, flying along the Allegheny Mountains, all the way from central Pennsylvania, for where we live, all the way down to Knoxville, Tennessee, and we've had flights of over 1,000 miles that achieved average speeds of over 100 miles an hour, which even in a power plane, frankly, is not easy to do because you have to stop for fuel. So it's what we do is totally remarkable, and we appreciate that more than the people outside that don't really understand what it is we're doing. But we're using the forces that's available in the nature with the air moving across the mountains that allows us to attain these kind of distances and speeds and altitudes that we're able to do.
How are glider pilots doing as a group in terms of safety as compared to, say, the pilots who are flying with engines?
Well, I don't watch the statistics on power flying. It's really difficult to get data because we don't know how many hours a year people are flying gliders or anything else for that matter, or how many flights are being made or who's making them. So getting real statistics that are meaningful is not really easy. The NTSB keeps track of accidents that are reported, and I'm afraid that not all of the accidents are reported, so there's a lot of missed data there. But the fatalities are reported, and frankly, we don't do as well as we should be doing, because like what we do, flying gliders should be and can be extremely safe. Like at our school, we've been teaching people to fly now for 43 years, and we've had no fatalities, and we've only ever had one pilot injured when they made an off-field landing in a farmer's field and didn't see a wire fence that he hit, and he broke his ankle. So we've had extraordinary success with our flight training program, although I must say we are extraordinarily thorough in our training. But I can't say that that's true for the entire soaring community, and it could be better.
How would a member of the general public know that they're becoming involved with the training group that has safety as their first issue? How would you know, for example, if you went for a test flight, just to get a feel for the sport, how would they know?
I don't know that I know the answer to that question. I think there is some confidence in the system. Like we have the Federal Aviation Agency, they establish the standards. They set the rules and the standards by which we pilots are required to fly. And so the general public has the confidence that the pilots that they're going to be flying with are being watched and monitored and checked from time to time.
And well-trained.
And as opposed to like driving a car, for instance, and where like most high schools, I understand, no longer even have driver training programs in the schools. And so the kids are out there driving automobiles with very little training at all, it seems. Whereas flying in any kind of aircraft, power or otherwise, is very, very regulated by the government. So there is some confidence in the way the system works.
Mm-hmm. And I know we're here today because you're offering a seminar that's all about safety for pilots who fly gliders.
That's right.
And it seems like there's a lot of emphasis in the gliding community on keeping up to date on safety.
Sure.
And becoming educated about new issues that
I
may
think
arise.
I think that's true, though, of all of aviation, in all the different aspects of aviation, whether it's flying helicopters or balloons. I think that safety is the single most important issue, because what we do is and should be safe, obviously.
All right. We talked a little about the experience of soaring, but I know there's a lot of variety in the soaring field on the types of airplanes that you can get in. So tell us a little bit about the range of craft that you have available.
Well, I think that when people first look at flying in general, all flying, it is fairly expensive, but it can be inexpensive. And so we have gliders that, like, you can go out and buy a used glider. I would say probably the minimum price would probably be something in the $6,000 range. And most of the gliders are owned by groups of people. So you get two or three people, because really when we go fly them on a weekend, you only fly for a few hours at the most, and then you land and you let somebody else fly. So partnerships really work really well. Now, for those people that are really, really involved and want to get into the latest and greatest of the equipment that's available, it's you can spend $250,000 on one of these ultra fancy modern sailplanes, and there's this variety of cost. And a lot of clubs, you know, there's commercial operations like ours. There's clubs that reduce cost greatly. And what I tell people is that flying gliders can be, as cheap as golf. I play golf too, and I can assure you that playing golf is at least as expensive, if not more so, than it does for me to fly my glider.
Are most of the gliders these days being built out of composite materials?
All the modern sailplanes are. Yeah, they're very exotic, all the latest and greatest materials, whether it's Kevlar and carbon fiber, fiberglass mostly in the gliders, the modern sailplanes today. But people still build gliders out of wood, you know, and steel tube and fabric, and all that's still possible.
All right. How about the cockpit? Are you seeing the advances in avionics in sailplanes
sure.
that you see in powered planes?
GPS has taken over, and so are the modern sailplanes, like the glider we have. Like, we have a transponder, we have radios, we have collision avoidance devices, and so we have everything that's modern and new that you can imagine. We have oxygen equipment in our glider, and so it's very similar to power planes.
All right, one last question.
Okay.
I want to wrap up a little bit here. What happens when you decide that you're going to go fly around and the winds may take you here or there? Are you in contact with the air traffic control system? I mean, how do you manage that variable in your flight path?
We have the same rules that anybody else has. So there's airspace that we are allowed to go to, where airspace we're not allowed to go to. And there's airspace that when we are in there, we are obliged to speak to somebody. So we have the same rules that the power planes.
All right. Thank you so much. We've been talking with Thomas Knopf today about soaring and sailplanes. And we appreciate you being here and talking with us at Managing Safety.
Thank you very much. It was our pleasure to be here.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team. Please visit our studio website at faaproductionstudios.com to hear past programs.